We are back with more of Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North. The human papillomavirus is considered the most common sexually transmitted infection in the United States. Many people know that the disease can cause cervical cancer, but it's also known to cause other kinds of cancer that affect both women and men. Although a vaccine has been available for more than a decade, vaccination rates remain relatively low, especially among boys and men. According to a CDC survey, around half of teens were up to date with the vaccination as of 2017. Dr. Brian Baer wants to change that. The retired OBGYN has given public presentations about the effects of HPV and the benefits of the vaccine. He joins Lake Effect's Joy Powers in the studio to talk about what HPV does and why vaccination rates remain low.
One of the reasons that I'm here today is secondary to the fact that regardless of the educational efforts that are going on to have people immunized for the HPV virus, the numbers are staggering how low they are.
Yeah, what makes you passionate about HPV? Because I think a lot of people who are older in particular don't think of HPV as being as pernicious an STI as some others like chlamydia or gonorrhea.
Well, HPV vaccine has been available since 2007. And what makes me passionate about it is the elucidation of its impact on our health and society and its ability to cause cancers, not just genital cancers, but anal cancers and penile cancers and oropharyngeal cancers. All of those things are HPV related. And we now have a tool that can impact society dramatically, yet the numbers are amazingly low. To this day, when I lecture people about HPV and diseases of the cervix, I'll ask independently in the room, I'll ask the women to raise their hands who have had the vaccine. Typically, it's about a 90% success rate with women. Then uniformly, the men are 20% or less have received the vaccine. And there's a history of why people aren't getting vaccinated, and I think it needs to be discussed along with what's available now and what the current recommendations are.
I'd like to take a step back and kind of go over what HPV is, because you hear this, you know, acronym, and I think a lot of people think of one thing, but HPV is actually kind of an overarching term for a number of different infections.
Well, well said. HPV is a virus. It's a DNA virus, and it's spread via mucous membranes mainly, but also by contact. And there are over 200 different types of the HPV virus. 14 of those types, also known as subtypes, are the ones that are considered high risk and cause diseases of the cervix, which is really where the HPV virus really began to be elucidated, was its impact on the cervix and its ability to cause precancerous and cancerous lesions. It always gives me pause when I think about back in the 80s when we would talk to people about their abnormal pap smears and lesions on their cervix. They would come in and we would say, "You have HPV." We used to think that it was the herpes virus that caused all these problems. And they would then say, "Well, I've got this in my vagina and on my cervix, and you're now telling me it's part of the lower genital tract, the mucous membranes. Can my significant other get this by having oral sex?" And we would say, "Well, there's no studies or data that really tell us that." Boy, were we wrong. And HPV is now the fastest rising cause of oral cancers in men. And so we are well aware of the high-risk nature of these 14 subtypes. And it's fascinating the way the vaccine has been introduced and the improvements that they've made through the years on how it's distributed and to whom.
Yeah. So what is the vaccination rate in the United States?
Well, some of the latest data shows that 60% of women initiate the vaccine series and only 40% of boys or men. And And I think that has a lot to do with how the recommendations have evolved to include men in the series. But the more contrasting and stark piece of information is that only 40% of women finish the series and only 20% of men finish the series. So there's a low amount that are initiating it and an even lower amount that are completing it. And this has a dramatic epidemiologic impact on society to produce herd effect reductions in the impact of not only precancerous abnormalities of the cervix, but cancers across all these different areas, the pharynx, the larynx, the hypopharynx, the anus, the penis, all these areas we can reduce cancer.
You know, when we're talking about HPV, it's one of the most common STIs.
It is.
In the United States. How many people have HPV already, and how likely are you to contract it?
Well, some of the data shows that over 17,000 women will have contracted it or will contract it, and over 9,000 men. There's well over 9 million people that have contracted HPV when you look at overall. That's a yearly rate. And we're seeing reductions. And I think because the vaccine is now being onboarded, not to the impact that I would like seeing, but it eventually will produce herd effect and reduce the number of new infections on a yearly basis. And so the numbers are real and they're large.
Well, and if you're one of the 9 million people who contracts it in a year, does it make sense for you to get a vaccine, or are you already too far gone? Will it do anything for you?
It makes 100% it makes sense, because if you think about it, if you backtrack again, we used to tell people that over 80% of people are exposed to HPV virus by the time they're 21. And when we first started dealing with these issues, we would do pap smears on women as soon as they became sexually active. And we would treat any abnormality. And we learned that this is overkill, that the natural history of the virus is that our body's immune system will eventually suppress it, provided that it doesn't produce a precancerous lesion that goes on to cancer. Now, some of these subtypes are very aggressive. Type 16 and 18 are the most aggressive subtype. They produce 70 to 80% of precancerous and cancerous lesions. What we've now found is that there's a number of other subtypes that can impact it. So that said, if you've had the original vaccine, which only covered for four of the subtypes, now there's an even newer vaccine that covers for five more. So if you've been exposed to one subtype, it's still worth getting vaccinated to protect you from these other high-risk subtypes. And along those lines, if you'd like, I can talk about the fact that the original vaccine was brought out in 2007, and it was for women ages 11 to 25. And there was reluctance to immunize people in pediatric offices and family practice offices, because at that age, they go through so many vaccines that it was just another thing to talk about. And a lot of people felt that as long as you're not sexually active, we can wait until later to give this vaccine. But the best impact is to do it all together and teach people that it's a vaccine that prevents cancer. It's not to prevent an STI. It's more for cancer reduction. So the original vaccine was four subtypes. It was type 6 and 11, which are a slow-growing part of the virus that actually causes more of the genital warts that you would see on the vulva and on the penis. It also included type 16 and 18, which were the high-risk, fast-growing subtypes, and that helped prevent 70 to 80% of those things that cause it. The one problem that's out there is that it didn't include men or boys. And so suddenly, a couple of years later, they decided that we need to include boys into this series. And it just took off so slowly that the impact is today felt very strongly that there's not a real push. Recently, in 2014, they added a new vaccine called 9-valent Gardasil, which includes five additional subtypes. And that will reduce the risk of cervical cancer by up to 90% now. And many of these cancers, it increases the cancer reduction by up to 15%. So now everyone is getting nine-valent Gardasil. And they've included, it has recently been added as of 2015, that men ages 11 to 25 should get the vaccine. And then what I think is beautiful is recently, last October of 2018, they decided that ages 26 to 45 should get a vaccine, that it will help and make an impact. So, I mean, they've finally decided to cover all components of the populations that could be exposed, because patients used to come in and say, you know, I'm 29 and I've missed this series, and the way you talk about it, I would like to get the series. And I say, well, insurance isn't covering it because it's not part of the guidelines. But if you want to pay for it, I'm sure you could get the vaccine. And now FDA guidelines have been approved for ages 27 through 45.
You know, you mentioned that women tend to get it more than men through sex. Why is that?
I think those are some of the initial numbers about the exposure rate. And I think if you look at those numbers in the next 2 to 5 years, you're going to see a change in those numbers. But I think the answer to your question is that women have more mucous membranes that can take up the virus, namely the vagina, and that can impact the surface of the cervix and the cells on the cervix. So I think that's where you're seeing a lot more of the uptake of the virus itself.
That makes sense. So, you know, when you're talking to people about HPV, the vaccine, where does the reluctance come from? Why aren't people getting this vaccine as much as they should be?
Well, that is the million-dollar question. I think what we're doing now is we're educating clinicians, practitioners, about how they have to approach patients. I think the initial feeling about the vaccine was the fact that someone's getting a vaccine to prevent an STI, as opposed to overall cancer reduction and herd immunity. So when we talk to people now, we have to approach it differently. The other thing is that men weren't really included in that discussion. And I think that it's still extremely slow to take off vaccinating men. And it's astounding to me. I have made it my mission to try and educate men on getting out there and getting vaccinated, because it's a subset of our population that still could be harboring the virus and spreading it. The good news is that more and more women are getting vaccinated. It's becoming more routine in offices. When I had patients come in and tell me that their daughters weren't getting offered the vaccine in their pediatric office, I used to have them bring their daughters into my office at the end of the day for vaccination. And I think I was successful in vaccinating a lot of young ladies that wouldn't eventually have not received the vaccine. So we're learning where our deficiencies have been in education. We're also trying to incorporate the series as, along with the meningococcus vaccine and the Tdap vaccine that these kids get at that age. And if we incorporate it and just say it's part of the series and say it's for cancer reduction as opposed to preventing STIs, I think we'll be much more effective in completing the series for more and more people.
Dr. Brian Baer is a retired OBGYN and an adjunct professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin. He's also an advocate for the HPV vaccine and has given public presentations about the impact of the virus. Dr. Baer spoke with Joy Powers, and you can find out more information about HPV and about the vaccine at wuwm.com.